Steve Chu, the CEO of New Zealand Rugby, on the program to talk about that and basically just the state of the union. Hi, Steve.
Good afternoon, Mark. How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. Look, just before we do look at that, a sad week with the death of former All Black captain Sir John Graham.
Yes, well, DJ, as he would, I'm sure, be happy for us to refer to him, has passed away. We'll be obviously seeing him off formally tomorrow at a funeral in Auckland, and a sad day. I think, as many people have said over the last couple of days, a great Kiwi, a great bloke, and someone whose life made a big difference to a lot of people in this country.
Now, Steve, you used to be CEO of Canterbury Rugby, and I'd imagine you're a proud Canterbrian. You'd be thrilled with the Crusaders, not just personally, but for rugby as a whole in this country with that performance earlier this morning.
Yeah, well, I think if you count the number of tackles the Crusaders have made in the last three games, it will break a whole heap of records, won't it? So, yeah, congratulations to everybody involved. They obviously had a season where they've lost one game, and you really can't fault them being champions and to fly back over the Indian Ocean to take on the Lions, who I suspect we're about to disagree, who are a very, very good side and worthy finalists. Was an outstanding achievement. Very proud of them. Mm.
Steve, as I said earlier, I mean, I think that finals will always have appeal, but the perception out there amongst a lot of people, myself included, that Super Rugby is a very dysfunctional tournament, and we're trying to get a bit of clarity exactly around who is responsible for maybe where this competition's at. So my first question is, who are SANZA? What is the makeup of SANZA, and what representation does New Zealand have on it?
Well, let me just share with me for a moment, because it's easy to criticise a competition that is dysfunctional without really understanding the complications of running a week-by-week competition over the best part of 4 months when you involve three countries that are as far apart as, well, in fact, now five countries that are as far apart as South Africa, Japan, Argentina, New Zealand and Australia. And even if you didn't expand to Argentina and Japan, it was always complicated. Travel is expensive, it takes a big toll on the players, and it complicates the draw because you've got to have people in the right place at the right time, and you've got time zones, and you've got broadcasters, whether you like it or not. And so it is messy, and we have to have conferences because of that, and the conference system does throw up some quirks. But, you know, frankly, anyone that's criticised the Lions, who have made two finals in a row and play, I think, an outstanding brand of rugby, I think should take a wee deep breath. But come back to your question. SANZA, as I said, is a joint venture, New Zealand, Australia and South Africa initially. Argentina have recently joined us at the table. We have two representatives on the board, and we're often represented in working parties with people from our union, because we are always sitting down and planning and working through what's next. And there's a meeting in South Africa in 6 weeks or so to do just that, about what happens post 2020.
Okay, Steve, but how come it is then that New Zealand Rugby and SANZA seem to be out of step with public opinion from both fans and critics when it comes to key decisions, i.e. neutral referees, the conference system, the convoluted draw?
Well, we've for some time debated, let's deal with the referee for a start. So we've for some time debated whether we need neutral referees. Our view has been, and supported by, I think, the majority of coaches over time, is that you've got to have the best referees refereeing. We had neutral referees referee the last referee all three games in the Lions series, and there were question marks about the performance of them as well. So whatever you do, someone will pick a hole in it if the referee makes a decision that is difficult to make, as a lot of them are. You know, did Yako get the red card right last night? I think quite clearly he did, but it had a major bearing on the game. But that's what happened. It happened for the All Blacks in the second test here in Wellington. So, you know, we've always taken the view, and I'm a very strong advocate of this personally, the best referee should referee knockout games regardless of where they are and who they are.
So, Steve, you would be happy if we had a Rugby World Cup final in South Africa against South Africa and New Zealand, in that World Cup rugby final, two teams evenly matched, and have a South African referee?
Well, the issue for World Cup is a little different inside SANZA, because SANZA, you're restricted to the three countries, well, now the five countries, but realistically we've only got referees of the standard to be doing a final in three countries. And so then you come down to, is the best New Zealand or South African referee better than the best Australian referee? And in the eyes of the selectors who we use in this regard, because we can't all pick the referees, that would be crazy. Yako was the best performed referee in the series. The second best performed referee was Glenn Jackson. That's why he was assistant referee number one. So if Yako got injured, Jacko would have gone on. You know, I think Angus Gardner is the best ranked referee out of Australia, and they thought he was just a tad behind. And so the final deserved the best. One of those two, they chose I chose Yarko.
Yeah, but this comes back to my point. Surely you're only in business because of the fans, and you have to address the perception of the fans. There is so much controversy around this tournament. There's so much negativity. And again, a non-neutral referee, it creates discussion. It takes focus away from the two teams, rightly or wrongly, but that is perception. Why is it that Sansa seem to have this inability to listen to the fans?
Well, actually, funny enough, Mark, we do listen to the fans. We've done a lot of market research to the fans. What we don't do is listen to everything that's talked about in the media, which is slightly different from the fans. And admittedly, you are a conduit to our fans, and we appreciate that, and that's one of the reasons we make time to talk through these issues with you. But ultimately, and I come back to it, the reason that we appointed Jaco Piper to the final is that he is the best referee available to us in Sansa. We don't go to the Northern Hemisphere for our own tournaments, and frankly, the appointment of two Frenchmen for the last two tests in the Lions series created just as much debate.
Well, so, but Steve, Chris Boyd came out last week and felt that Jaco Piper needed to go upstairs and ask his TMO on a couple of those decisions. I mean, based on what you're telling me, I would have thought Glenn Jackson would have been appointed to the finals.
Well, as I say, there are some selectors. We don't have the chief executive speaking to referees either. I think, well, I know because I asked. There was a very close call. They decided Jaco was slightly ahead of Glenn in this series, but it was a 50-50 call. That's the way they went. Now, if you'd appointed Glenn, he would have not been neutral in your definition of it either. And, there is a point where we have to say the referees are men of integrity, and they're not going to cheat because all this debate suggests that they're going to cheat. Now, obviously, if there's a 50-50 call, then the speculation starts to be a bit different than if they were neutral. But look, some of the biggest refereeing decisions that have upset New Zealanders in the last 20 years have come from neutral referees. Cast my mind back to Cardiff.
Look, I agree, but it's still this perception thing that I think you guys are not quite getting here. Look, Steve, do you agree? And I'm going to come back to this because I do believe it is a convoluted, dysfunctional sort of schedule here. I mean, are super fans being pushed to their limits in the name of profit here?
Well, let's work our way back, right? So we went from 15 to 18 for a specific reason, well, for a number of reasons, right? First of all, we wanted Argentina to secure themselves in the Rugby Championship, and to do that, they were telling us they needed a team in Super Rugby, so we had to go one more side in that regard. The South Africans were telling us at the time, and at the end, you know, they've changed their mind now, thankfully, but at the time, we need to have the Kings in, and we're not prepared to drop one of our five traditional sides, so at six, or we're gone, and in the end, we waited up here in New Zealand, and in the end, we waited up, and we said, we need South Africa in, and so finally, to make it work at all, you've got to have an even number, and that's how the Sunwolves came in. Sunwolves long-term, strategically, because you've got to play a long-term game occasionally, Mark. You've got to give teams a chance to develop. If we're ever going to grow so we can have a conference system that is easier to manage, which would be up the world rather than across it, then we're going to need some teams in Asia, West Coast of the USA. So at some stage, you've got to take a punt. So that's how we've ended up with what we've got, 18 teams across these three time zones, and the travel involved requires a conference system, not ideal, but the best one we could do. We know the fans haven't enjoyed it. One of the reasons why we have steadfastly said we need to get back to 15, and that's what we're waiting for Australia to complete.
Steve, personally, I think that the job of New Zealand rugby, their primary function is to start looking after, first and foremost, is to look after the game of rugby here in New Zealand and to look after us, the fan. We've got people in Christchurch who are expected to turn up on terrible nights at 2 degrees in the rain and watch quarterfinals and semifinals to appease the Northern Hemisphere. We've got countries like Japan. We've been told we're trying to grow
the game. Hang on. If you're going to have a discussion that's going to go past a statement that's not accurate. So first of all, we don't control the weather. Secondly, the weather can be bad during the day as it can be in the evening. And we do not schedule them for 8 o'clock or 7:30 in New Zealand time for the broadcasters in the UK. That is purely scheduled for the broadcasters and the market and the fans in New Zealand. Our fans have spoken, actually, because in the end, the fans will watch or don't watch. When we've played games in the afternoon, the television audience, which is the number of fans that we rely on, goes down by somewhere between 40 and 70%, and that is a real figure.
Okay, but what about the fans turning up to the games? I mean, I spoke to Hamish Riack last week, and he said when they did have the daytime rugby this year in Super Rugby against the Highlanders, they sold it out 2:30 in the afternoon. It was a great experience for the fans. You know, it's not a great look, Steve, when you've got half-empty stadiums for a quarterfinal, a semi-final of arguably the world's best domestic rugby competition.
Yep. So again, if we had played those games during the day all year round, then the money we would have received from the broadcasters and the rest of our commercial partners would have dropped exponentially, and the fan would have been watching teams without all our stars because they would be overseas.
Okay,
that's just the reality of it, Mark. I mean, this debate's very old, right? We would prefer to play all of our games in the afternoon as well. The other thing that it affects, which you shouldn't forget, particularly in Super Rugby, is club rugby throughout New Zealand. You play too many games at 2:30 on Saturday afternoon during the club season, which has just finished, then you will decimate what is really a very difficult job for our club administrators now.
Well, how come South Africa play all their rugby in the daytime? Most of their Super Rugby is daytime. Is their society that much different than ours?
Yeah, it is. And one of the reasons they play daytime, particularly in Johannesburg and a couple of the other big cities, is that it's too dangerous to play at night and their fans simply won't go. And as you rightly said before, our job is to look after New Zealand rugby, and so it's different.
Now, we're all witnessing at the moment the painful process. Attempts have been made to eliminate two Australian franchises. Was profit again the villain here from Sansar? And were they naive to believe that Australia could ever sustain five teams in South Africa, six, who have just given way to two?
Australia trying to get rid of one, just so we get the facts right. I guess the benefit of hindsight, you could call us naive, stupid, or well-meaning, whatever you prefer. I mean, at the end of the day, the Australians were adamant some time ago they needed to go to five teams. That expansion happened quite a long time ago. Admittedly, we agreed to that to make sure that the joint venture kept developing and was in one piece. And as I said before, the South Africans gave us no choice. We could have walked away from South Africa, in which case we would have spent all year playing ourselves in Australia. I mean, given they haven't beaten us in 12 months, that wouldn't have been much fun for the fans either.
Yeah, but Steve, nobody's interested really outside of the local derbies between the two New Zealand teams. I mean, when the South African sides come over here, you don't get a lot of talk back off it. There doesn't seem to be a lot of interest in and around it. The stadiums are half empty. When we get the local derbies, everybody seems to turn up. Everybody seems to talk about it. Can we operate a Super Rugby format without South Africa going forward?
No, we don't think so. And there's another component here which is really important. And it's like, at the end of the day, as I said before, if you want to play Australia and South Africa, then it will be a very different competition. And this year, it would have been very different. The problem with the local derbies are it takes an enormous toll on our players. And while it might be the best rugby to watch, and you just need to take a little bit of a deep breath, there's been some good crowds for South African teams in New Zealand this year as well, often weather-dependent, and we've probably had the worst winter we've had for a while. And the numbers actually aren't too bad. But if we only play Australia, then it is very clear to our coaches and our high-performance guys, then the All Blacks will be worse for that, because the first time our guys get to play a team like South Africa, up in the high veld, travel all that way will be when they're an All Black. And where for a long time, we believe, benefited considerably because our players have been over there. And you think of some of the young guys that are playing on that Crusaders side last night, who experienced the week in Johannesburg, experienced playing at altitude, experienced 60,000 incredibly loyal and passionate Lions fans. How good will that be if the next World Cup in 2023 is in South Africa and some of those boys are our mature, experienced All Blacks?
Okay, how concerned are you then that of the two Super Rugby teams that have exited this competition, the South African teams, they've now joined, i.e. what is the Celtic League, or the top 12 in the Northern Hemisphere, that could end up proving to be very profitable for those two franchises and ultimately for South African rugby? If, say, the Sharks were to follow suit because of the challenges of having to travel across and play New Zealand teams, what plans have been put in place in case we do start to see an exodus out of South Africa?
Yeah, well, again, there's a number of elements to that, Mark. I don't think it's unreasonable that South Africa have found an alternative for the two teams that they've had to drop out of Super Rugby. That's what I think our people would have expected of us if we were going through the same process. It's not the top 12 in Europe, let's be very clear. It is the Celtic League. It's called the Pro 12, and it's a league that currently struggles because it doesn't have the English or French clubs in it. It's not the Heineken Cup, which is the top four from each of those leagues playing each other across Europe, and it's not either of the two big leagues, which are the French and English leagues, premierships. So it is a struggling competition, but that is a risk. The South Africans tell us at the moment that it's certainly not on their agenda. They are genuinely committed to Sansar in the long term. But it's a long, as we said before, it's a long-term game, and that's why it's important for us to be investing some time and patience in teams such as the Sunwolves. And that's why we've got a little bit of research underway around the actual feasibility of a Pacific Island team, and we are talking to people on the west coast of the States. But all these things take time. They don't work immediately. And as you rightly say, our fans, and particularly those that talk to our fans, tend to be pretty impatient around these things.
Just want to get your thoughts just before we do let you go, Stephen. I do appreciate you joining us this afternoon, just in and around the Blues. I mean, a better season, but still, in comparison to the rest of the New Zealand Super Rugby season, is another disappointing season. How much support has New Zealand Rugby given them? I mean, how much was done to try and keep players like Piatau, Luatua, Farmer-Weena here? Not necessarily from an All Black point of view, but just in terms of trying to create some stability and getting the Blues back to where they once were.
Yeah, well, you know, look, my wife and I were discussing this in the early hours of this morning as we were watching the Lions play. I think it's a reasonable argument that the three principal cities of each of these countries, so Sydney, Johannesburg and Auckland, probably have underperformed in this competition. If you look at the weight of numbers, the size of the sponsorship market, the depth of player they have, et cetera, none of those three teams have really... The Blues obviously had a good start to this comp, but haven't really performed since. There's an issue for all three, frankly. Well, we work closely with the Blues, but we have to be very careful. We've got to take a fair-handed approach to all five of our super clubs. But we made no secret of the fact we tried very hard to keep the three players that you mentioned, and we particularly through Steve Hansen, expressed our disappointment when a couple of them went. You know, we'd like to keep everybody, Mark, but the reality is it's an international marketplace, and even playing all our games at night, we only generate so much revenue, so we can only spend what we get.
Steve, too, thank you for joining us this afternoon. Thank you for being upfront and honest. Much appreciated.
No problem. My pleasure.
Thank you.